How's it going? Hope you're doing well out there. This is Mario Caleri. I've been a Vader artist since, geez, 1996. So going on 25 years, unbelievably. I'm really stoked today to be able to interview one of my favorite drummers, Adam Deitch. If you don't know Adam's playing, hopefully you'll be inspired to check him out. A few things about him for those of you who aren't familiar. His main gig going back quite a while is the band Lettuce, which is an incredibly funky band. He has played with all kinds of other people. He's a writer, a producer. If I had to use two words to describe Adam's drumming, I would say relentless pocket. Every time I see Adam, he's just throwing down pocket. And that's totally correct for whatever he's doing. So he's a guy I really admire, and I'm really stoked to be able to talk to him and kind of pick his brain a little bit. And so without further ado, Adam Deitch.
What's up?
Hey, buddy, how's it going?
How's it going, man? Thanks for having me.
Pretty good. Thanks for being here. I'm glad you could do it. When Chad at Vader asked me what cats I might be interested in interviewing, you were at the top. So I'm
Oh,
glad you could do it.
thanks, man.
Right on. So I'm in my drum studio, and it looks like you're in your spot. And you're a longtime New Yorker, but you're in Colorado now, right?
There's no way I could have this situation in New York.
Yeah.
Unless I live like deep out in Queens or Jersey City or something, but to be this close to the city and have a place to play and play my drums is a dream.
That's cool. Have you been, I have to ask you a couple questions before we can do this interview. It's required by the health codes. Have you lost your sense of taste or smell recently?
Have not. I have not.
Okay, are you running a fever?
I am not.
Okay, now, in regards to funkiness, on a scale of 1 to 9, with 1 being Pat Boone and 9 being Bobby Bird, how funky are you feeling today?
I'm feeling like Bobby Bird level funky today.
Oh, that's great. Okay, good. Okay, so we're good then. We can
Yeah.
continue.
Yeah.
So in your spot, I saw it earlier, you got two kits set up there.
Yeah.
So, and they're for working out different kinds of playing or different tones.
Yeah, there's totally two different worlds. Like, if you're a funk drummer, get a bebop kit and just try it out. This is like, I have a 16-inch floor tom as a kick, and I got the kick flip by my friend Zach Nager from Grey Boy All Stars. He makes those
Oh,
little
yeah.
kick stands, and then I got the funk kit over here, which is like can't really see it, but
Oh,
the
yeah.
regular touring size stuff. And yeah, so it's just great to like play both of them, and totally different vocabularies, totally different ideas, and it's fun to like try to record both of them and see what you can come up with,
Yeah, I noticed on your funk kit, you have, which I've seen you do live, is you got some percussion on your left.
Yeah.
And when I took a lesson with you earlier this year, by the way, you still doing that?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so I think it's lettuceteach, right, dot com. I just want to make sure I get that in there. If you want to take lessons from the guys in Lettuce, this is a one of a kind opportunity because of COVID. All these touring guys are home. And I saw that Adam was teaching, and I took a lesson from him and just went straight in on some of the stuff that he does great that I wanted to get to know about.
No,
So
I mean,
that brings me to talking about your setup. One of the things that you do so dope, which is you have been able to cop a full DC go-go groove by yourself, which is typically defined by the drums and the percussion. And you've had to switch up and do some linear shit and a lot of left-hand independence. It sounds just like those records. And I see you got the congas over there.
it's a
So
yeah, Kunga,
that.
yeah, the left side stuff is a mental, brain thing that I'm trying to work out since listen to early Dennis Chambers with P-Funk, I think it's like the Earth Tour, and he was playing timbales and splash cymbals and bells over here. And it sounded like two guys, and just the way he played it on like the one E and all the E's, all the upbeats, and I was just like, man, and he would keep the groove in his right hand, got, and just having this just be percussion, and
Yeah.
I just kind of like started doing that for years, and also like the bucket players in New York City, like on the streets, like who tick got tick 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 got tick, all that kind of stuff I was hearing
Yeah.
with the different little things, a little frying pan here or this, whatever. So I was like, wow, I got to somehow figure out how to keep a groove going with one limb and keep this playing other stuff, you know? So it's been a fun journey, and every couple of gigs, it would grow bigger. My drum tech tour manager would just every day be like, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger.
Because you got bells, you got bongos, I've seen it. You got a lot of shit.
I got a lot of shit.
And one thing that I have to say, it spoke to me when we talked about it, about what a committed player you are to the craft, was when I was asking you about this go-go shit. So I'm seeing the finished product. When I see you play that shit, I'm hearing this one-man percussion orchestra, mm-hmm. and it's right in the cut. But what you told me that I thought was really inspiring was that you said, I shedded that shit a lot before I took it to the band. So, you know, a lot of times nobody sees the hard work. It's just like being an athlete or something. You don't see the guy mm-hmm. shooting 1,000 free throws and, you know, taking a million layups. You just see him mm-hmm. executing. So I was able to go, you kind of showed me behind the curtain, like, no, man, like I worked this stuff up until I got happy with it.
Yeah. It's definitely a process. It's still a process. I mean, the whole process of go-go for me started with the early hip hop stuff I was listening to, like Curtis Blow, like that, you know, I'm 45 years old. So the early hip hop to me was like Curtis Blow, Run DMC, Brand Nubian, stuff like that, you know, like that's where I was coming up. And they all had these swinging.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love that beat. And I didn't know it was coming from go-go. I didn't know about Chuck Brown and all that stuff yet. But I knew I loved the swing on it. And I mm-hmm. knew I loved the kick drum pattern and the little percussion, the bells happening all around it. So it started to absorb from, you know, when I started collecting tapes when I was like 10, 11, 12 years old. So, and then I got a little older, and remember I did my first gig in DC with Average White Band, I believe it was, in the early 2000s. And I got to meet Juju. He was playing with Moesha, who was like, they were like a go-go band, local go-go band, and he was slamming, and we ended up hanging out. He loved Average White Band, and you know, that gig kind of gave me an opportunity to like befriend a lot of heroes, you know, and kind of be like, hey man, they're like, oh man, you know. And so it was my first gig out of college, so it was amazing. So going to DC, hanging out with Juju, and like he was driving me around, and we went to get crab cakes and shit, like,
whoa.
And I was just like, man, this guy's like a legend, like Chuck Brown's a guy, you know. And then like it started to build like this love affair with DC, very similar to my New Orleans love affair, you know. And
yeah, not very many places have that sense of identity of groove and a style, groove, like
of the city that you can identify. That's that city, you know. Yep. Like New York has that with like hip hop to me, and you know, maybe like forward thinking, straight ahead stuff, you know, like, you know, I just feel like New Orleans and DC are connected because they have that swing, and it's that triplety feeling, that slow thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And the second line is so connected to the go-go beat to me, you know, in a lot of ways with the feel and how it is.
Clave, big time. Yeah. There's some definite parallels for sure. And you cop that heavy swing real well, whether it's the go-go style, the hip hop style, the New Orleans shit, it's all in you.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that I was getting into with you too, and your foot. And you told me like some particulars about how you developed your right foot, which I don't know if you want to talk about that or you could maybe demonstrate, but I noticed that from hip hop to funk, when you play a double, ba-boom. Funk thing is the first note is more of a pickup. When it becomes hip-hop, it was probably coming from a machine, a sample. Yeah. And they're the same velocity. And that's something that you clued me in on and that you worked up.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. You could look at it like you're an NPC or you're a machine and you mm-hmm. want to have it be all even. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, or you get more you know, subtle.
Yeah.
Do 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 do. you know, yeah. Like there's times and places for both of those for me, you know, and you know, for me, like I broke my leg when I was in seventh grade. A piano fell on my leg.
Oh,
actually, today is the anniversary of that day.
Oh, my day of infamy.
Yeah, Dave. My dad always calls it the day of infamy. And I was moving a piano at in seventh grade, and I was going to play it. It started to tip over, and I was embarrassed because I was in the middle of class. You know, don't drop the piano. So I went to push it back up, and it weighed about a ton. And it started to fall on top of me, and I moved out of the way at the last second, and it caught my bass drum foot. And I have a giant scar that goes all the way down my leg. And I've been playing drums, people that don't know, my parents are drummers, and I've been playing drums, I'm 2 years old. So it's not like I hadn't really started yet. I was like deep into drums mm-hmm. by 14 years old, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a pretty traumatic experience. So I had to relearn how to play the kick drum.
How long was that process?
It took a few years. Like I'm still working it out. I'm still doing basic stuff that other drummers can do really easily. I don't know if you can see.
Oh yeah. Foot cam.
So I used to play heel up like everybody. You know, that's how kids play. If you've been playing since you were a little kid, because you got
to reach. Yeah.
Right. So that's how I grew up playing. And then I broke my leg. I couldn't do that anymore. So I had to get this technique where I'm dropping my heel down. And it's wow. Like, it's much easier. And then you can do like, you know, do. You know, just that kind of stuff is like, it's like the rock, you know, you're.
Yeah, it's like a heel toe, but it's not exactly because you're not slipping. It's more like a toe heel.
Yeah.
It's not a toe heel. It's more of a heel toe. It's like you're starting on the back, right?
Sometimes I'll attack it from the toe and sometimes I'll attack it from the toe. So it's like,
I've never seen anybody do it like that. That's a trip.
It was just because of the ankle break, you know, like I just needed to get back quick. I think I started playing with a cast on. Now I might have been with a cast on or something. Like I just had to get back, you know, it was the longest I'd ever been away, and it made me appreciate the instrument a little more because I was mm-hmm. into skateboarding before that. I wasn't playing drums at all. I quit playing drums when I was like 12. Right when everyone's getting like started with their lessons, I was in the streets skateboarding and being mm-hmm. you know, New York derelict. But you know, like when I had the ankle break, I couldn't go out. My skater friends were like, "Peace, homie," you know, like good luck being in bed. Yeah. You know, I was like wheelchair, you know. So that's where I really started listening to music a lot and like can't wait to get back to drums and then the Berkeley thing happened and then I was fully in.
Yeah. Can I ask you a little bit about some of your like inspirations and even to this day, like the foundational shit and maybe stuff that you're even to now are into that you look to for inspiration? Like I know you're big into funk and soul and hip hop. Earth, Wind and Fire I know is huge for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many. I know it's endless, but are there any guys, let me maybe like narrow it down a little bit. Are there any things that are maybe a little off the radar that you're super into that you might want to shine a little light on? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I've spoken a lot about, you know, the hip hop connection and how that connected to funk for me and like, you know, that kind of stuff. I got super into reggae playing with Wyclef. You know, I always grew up loving like dance hall, like kind of like Shabba Ranks and Super Cat, stuff like that. That was like on the radio that we grew up, like a lot of reggae stuff. And then I started getting in, you know, when I was at Wyclef, we toured the island. So, you know, we'd been in Trinidad or Jamaica and it'd be like the greatest bands in the land opening up for Wyclef, you know, the big star from America. So I got to see a lot of like amazing soca, calypso.
Oh yeah.
I fell in love with that. I grew up playing a little bit of compa, which is Haitian, traditional, like kind of Haitian music.
Interesting.
I had a lot of Haitian friends and they hit me to this. And I used to play in a church that was like all Haitian people. And we would play like like a bit, kind of like a compa gospel thing. But so basically, instead of playing a hi-hat, I don't know if you can see, you hold, yeah, let me move this a little bit. You hold the crash cymbal.
Okay.
Like it's a hi-hat, and they usually set it up really low.
Okay.
That would be, which I think is, I'm pretty much, because Haiti's a very poor country, and it's like, to get a working hi-hat. So it's like, if you had a cymbal, you now have, that's your hi-hat, you know?
Got it, yeah.
So they would do stuff like this, this rhythm, which is basically first three notes of clave, you know. And you just, it's a choke thing, right?
Yeah.
And then you do the accents on the E, so it's like. So it's like, that's like the Bane groove.
You know? Oh man, that's dope. I'm not hip to that. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's K-O-M-P-A-H, compa.
Awesome.
And it's all around there. So it's like, you hear the recordings, it's like drum machine a lot of the time. And then you see the cats in Haiti play it and you're like, oh, that's that shit, you know? So mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love that kind of music.
So you've done a lot of gigs. I mean, they're not even necessarily on your bio, all of them. I saw you with Slick Rick. It was one of the first times I saw you play in Colorado. And I think I was on tour and I had a day off. And we went, we're like, let's go see Slick Rick. I didn't know that he, what his band was. And I saw it was you. It might have been Jesus too. I'm not sure it was in the band.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. I mean, and Slick Rick was way out. I don't need to tell you that. He spent like half an hour describing the deeper meanings of his jewelry.
Mm.
But you killed on that gig. I've never seen you not play the right shit. Wow. So, and I love that you're really a champion for keeping the live drums in hip hop and other forms of music that have turned mostly to program stuff, and to keep that live interpretation of it. I saw you with Well, I've seen you a bunch of times, like on the jam cruise, which if people don't know, there's there's all these cruises and there's this one that's the longest going cruise around jam band music. And this is going back a while now, but I've seen you on there a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the last times I was on there, I think you were the guest artist.
Mm-hmm.
So you were like the featured artist. So you were playing multiple bands, plus you hosted the jam room.
Mm-hmm.
So I had so many opportunities to see you play, and I just want to tell the story real quick because I got you here. So on one night, I think I was posted up with Alan Evans in one of the lounges to watch you play. So you first did a set. I might have the order wrong, but you were on the drums for about 4 or 5 hours straight, and I'm sure you remember it because you were wrung out. So you played with Break Science, which is its own thing that you have, which we can talk about that a little more too. It's so dope. Really exploring live drums with this real soundscape of cool programmed and atmospheric shit that Borum does.
Wow.
And then the supergroup Dr. Claw played, and you just, I think that you might've moved the kit like 3 feet. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, have a drink of water, pour some water on my head and plug in the mics and let's keep going. And then you rock that for another 90 minutes or whatever it was straight.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing again. And then this might have been unannounced, but everyone's like, Lettuce is going to play tube. Get down to the. And then Lettuce jumped up and did a whole set.
Mm-hmm.
And even by the second set, I was going, this dude is relentless. The shit does not waver. The pocket is so strong. And I'm looking at this, you. I'm going, man, Adam is a mother. He is hurt. I could tell. He's hurting by the end. But the thing about it was, this is how ingrained of a pocket player you are. It's like pocket trumps everything for you. Because I know by the end of the Lettuce set, you were at the end of your rope. There's no doubt about it. You almost fell over when you got off the drums. But the beat never wavered. I don't know many cats.
Yeah.
I don't know many cats who could do that. So that was one time when I saw you that will always stick with me, because you always sound great, but I got to see you push it super hard in three different sets, different music, and never let up. So props to you, man. That was sick.
Jam cruise is always a wild situation.
I think I tried to say, dude, that was incredible. And you were like glossed over, like, who am I? I was like, oh yeah, this dude's toast. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I was severely dehydrated, most likely.
Oh yeah.
Coming off that kit.
Yeah.
A lot of people try to talk to me when I get off and my head's in another place.
Of course.
I've been grunting in my head going, and I'm there in my head and people like, hey man, so anyway, we met literally, and they start talking to me. I'm just like, you know, that's how I am normally anyway. But like when I get off stage, I've been in this like complete meditational zone of kick and snare, mm-hmm. you know, and like I'm singing the kick and snare over and over. Then I'm singing the bass parts. I'm singing the guitar part. Once I have the kick and snare where I want it, then, you know, I feel comfortable with it. Now I could sing other parts. And I'm singing the bass line in my head. And then it starts to like become part of my mental picture of the groove. So I get outside of the drums, you know, like, and then I start singing the guitar part. And that becomes part of my like concept of where the group pocket should be at. You know what I mean? And so, you know, that's where I'm at. And when I get up, you know, I'm out.
Yeah, sure.
I can't even
see. So that's interesting. So when you're playing, you are developing inner dialogue of starting with getting happy with your pocket, with where you're putting the beat. Oh, and once you feel good on that, then you start hearing more and more pieces of the picture.
Exactly. Like when you bring in the bass player's part into your mind, into your, you know, in here, and you're really listening to his part or her part, and it's vibing. And you start singing it, and that it just like that pocket that the person's playing, you learn to mold to it in that right way, or else you're going to like thinking about just the drums and am I grooving and am I? It's not about you. It's about like how do we all fit together in this thing? You know? Like,
yeah. Well, then that defines a lot of the music that I hear you doing because, you know, a great funk music. You know, going back to the tradition of James Brown, is an assemblage of interlocking parts that create a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And Lettuce totally exemplifies that. You guys, there's not wasted shit going on from anybody. So it does make sense to me that you, especially in Lettuce, would be hearing the big picture of and all the parts and seeing how it all gels. Because you got to be the glue. But the fact of the matter is, everybody in that band plays time like a mother.
Sure.
And it's not like, oh, the drummer's a timekeeper. Everyone's locked.
They all have drummer-like rhythm.
Yep.
And even better than a lot of drummers I know. Like,
oh, without a doubt.
And everyone approaches their parts like a percussion part in, you know, maybe a West African sort of groove or like a Cuban thing where, you know, you got clave, you have congas, you have a timbali part. And so everyone approaches their parts like that and to make, you know, to make it all lock. And that's how everyone thinks. So by singing everyone's part, I think that that's a normal thing in those sort of like cultures, like, you know, like the cats that, and like a Brazilian cat can play the surdo, you know, doom, 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 but then he can sing, you're singing, I don't know what they call the snare drum. I forget part, but just the high, you know, the high part. So
Repenique or one of those, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know.
I want to change gears real quick because the, you know, in the bigger picture, you're a guy that you do a lot of things, but I know that foundational to making a living is touring, like for a lot of our peers for you. And that's been taken off the table for quite a while. So I mentioned earlier that you've used some of this time to teach, to make yourself available for some lessons. What other things have you been doing to not just, you know, exist to get by, but what have you been doing to take advantage and try to make it into a positive? I know you write, I know you produce. Are you leaning more into those skill sets with this time?
Well, I've been doing sort of a video blog with a wig recently. It's really
I highly recommend it. we'll franchise that.
You know, if y'all haven't seen Mario do his thing, it's hilarious. For 40 years, I've been playing drums, and I never had the ability to record my own drums. It's crazy. It's always been if you go to a studio, there's an engineer that's going to do it his way, you know, and mm-hmm. and you just got to just deal with their concept of what your drums should sound like, you know. And I just feel like I've taken this time to get me a couple mics, and I'm looking forward to, you know, getting better at it and recording myself more often, and because I'm making a lot of music, and I want to put live drums on it for the first time. Like even my hip hop stuff that I've been putting out on Spotify, it's on Golden Wolf Records. It's like all my kind of beat records where I was sort of like combining live drums and sample drums and doing that thing. And now it's like with my setup with these, you know, my mic setup, my new mic setup, I can record drums. So it's like learning how to mix drums and drum buses.
Oh,
and
yeah, it's endless.
Compressors. It's like
the it's most being a baby again. Thing. Yeah, what's it's that? Like starting at square one. It's like being yeah. a baby again. It's a whole new world to learn.
Exactly. And it's like I have my concept of what I want to sound like. And, you know, I don't have to, you know, I mean, it's nice to know the Glyn Johns way and all the other ways and the, you know, the Dap Kings old school way. And mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, it's like, what do I want my drums to sound like? And I'm going for like this, like trying to get this like J Dilla hip hop thing dialed in, you know? And like mm-hmm. every time I sit down, I have this template that I just copy to a new session. And like, for the first time in my life, it's like, bang, drum sounds ready. And nice. It's a new life. It's a new way to do it. So I'm like hitting up all my favorite producers and being like, hey, send me an MP3 with no drums and let me just lay this down. I'm just, if you dig it, you dig it. If you don't, you know, I'm not, yeah. So, you know, I'm creating sessions by just reaching out to people and asking to play on shit.
That's a great place to start for yeah. sure. Because you got to let people know that you're doing that.
Yeah.
To create the awareness. Yeah.
People are like, yo, Adam's actually a live guy, you know? Oh, yeah, he's a live guy. Let's call this guy. He's got a home setup with what's that mic you were talking about before?
The Beta. No, I was just saying that we're talking about kick mics. I was saying the Beta 52.
Beta 52. You know, guys like you that could groove and have great mics, and you know, that's who you call for a session. You know, like, so I'm trying to reinvent myself as like, hey, you know,
You should. You got the space to do it. You definitely, without a doubt, have the musicality. And then just being able to get the awareness out that you can do this and you can turn into another way to make a living. That's as mm-hmm. I've eased off the road, even pre COVID, that's where mm-hmm. I transitioned.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's way cool. You're doing that and people should hire you for what you do. It's smart. Have you been using it all with any of your collaborators, whether it's Borum and Break Science or the guys in Lettuce? Have you been sending any files back?
Oh, that's all I do. My MO for the end of the last 6 months was start working around 10 p.m. And then I would sometimes, if I'm into the track, I would go till about 5 or 6 a.m. until it's done. Because I know I'm sending it to like my guys who are hard to impress. Let me just say that.
Discerning.
Yeah, like they're a tough crowd, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You want to make sure that the demo you're sending them makes them go, I like it, let's play it, you know?
Yeah.
So that inspires me, you know, their relentlessness in making sure that what I send them is top quality.
I have a couple clients that are very particular, and that makes you grow. When you know your shit's got to be spot on, tones, playing, time, and all the technical shit. I'm not like peaking any of these levels and distorting, like just you know, I'll play a great drum track and I'll look over and I didn't turn on a mic and I'm like, that was the take. Oh, that, my god, what did I do?
Yeah.
And so I'm learning now to keep, I'm not a real technical guy, but to keep an eye on the technical stuff mm-hmm. so that I get that set straight and then I can just focus on doing the musical part.
Yeah,
but that's cool that they're discerning, because it's it makes you step up your game.
And doing sessions by yourself without, it takes away the performance aspect of it. Like, oh, there's people watching, there's mm-hmm. an engineer like that's hoping for you to play that perfect take, and you're thinking about him instead of you, you know?
Yeah. So
if you're
tracking, you have the luxury of time.
Yeah. You're tracking yourself. You're like, you're in another zone. You're in the ears zone. You know, there's no eyes, there's no watching. There's no, I better perform for these people and do something snazzy. It's like you're playing for the record in a new way, almost. Like, you know. Yeah, so
I love the freedom of that, because for me to be able to experiment, like, you wouldn't do that on everybody's dime. Like, I'm going to throw up this weird snare, and if it doesn't work, that's okay that I spent a half an hour on it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. People not looking at you like that. I told you not to use that snare, you jerk. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's great that you're doing that, and I think a lot of our peers are. And it's not a great substitute for playing with other people in the same room, but it's a great tool for collaborating, and it's the best of what we got right now.
It's what we got to do, you know?
Yeah.
I've collaborated with, you know, a lot of people I would have never collabed with, you know, like, that are always on tour. And it's just like, it's a dream come true. Like, yeah, so I'm always looking forward. You know, I send a bunch of stuff out, and I might get, you know, 8 out of 10 responses back, but that's cool. You know, like, I'm getting better at it, and it's motivating, and it keeps me into, like, the recording head, like the tracking records head, as opposed to, like, blindly going off just to release the steam of quarantine, you know?
Like, yeah, you have to, yeah, it's another side of your playing to develop, that, like, self-editing and making good choices, as opposed to, like, when you go to your jazz kit, you may be working on your ideas and your flow and other things, other sides you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about some gigs you've done that you're famous for, incredibly worldwide famous for. One of the first times, so I think the first time I heard you, if I'm not mistaken, was on the first Sko record you did. And there was a lot of buzz. Like, have you heard this young cat that Sko's got? Cause you know, Sko has a lineage of some of the best drummers.
Sure does.
And the fact that you were in there and he was taking your lead stylistically, and he gave you a lot of, it seems like he gave you a lot of leeway to influence his sound on that record and the subsequent records too. But can you tell me a little bit about, I'm interested in that because Sko's a hero of mine, and I think people would probably like to hear about that, about how that went down. And I mean, you must have been pretty young. And
yeah, I was just coming off of the Average White Band stuff, and I did 3 years with them. So, you know, he knew I had been on the road before. I think that's one thing all drummers should do, is like get on some sort of tour so cats know that you're road tested. You know, nobody really, it's hard because, you know, like sometimes, you know,
how do you start when everyone wants you to have experience? Exactly. You got to get in somehow.
Yeah, you got to get in somehow. So
yeah,
I'm glad I had that experience with Average White, and that got me to the point where Sko knew I was playing with somebody. And I got to give it up to Eric Krasno from Soulive and Lettuce, because, you know, he just the kind of cat that knows everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a really quiet spoken guy. Just everybody loves Kras, you know. And he got Schofield to sit in with Lettuce, like at the Wetlands in New York. Like, you know, because Schofield, it was the era where Schofield was playing with Medeski, Martin, and Wood. And
he had already dipped a foot in the jam scene, in the groove scene.
Whatever Medeski, Martin, and Wood are. They're like, you know, funk mixed with Brazilian avant-garde and Cecil Taylor and, the jam scene, But they got embraced by the Fishheads and the Deadheads, you know, like before any other bands like them did, which is what I told John Medeski the other day. I was like, thanks for paving the road for bands like Lettuce and stuff, because, you know, you guys really created a lane that didn't exist. And he goes, highway to hell, motherfucker, you know?
Right. Yeah. So Kras invited Sko because there was a connection there, and he got him to sit coming down to one of your gigs. Yeah.
So we're like, you know, I busted out, let's play like some old Steve Jordan with Sko shit. Like, you know, like the old super funk, you know, Sko. And so we busted it out and we're playing it and it's feeling good. And I'm up there having a good time. And he keeps cutting off the band. He keeps looking at everybody else and going, stop. Just me and the drums. Like, it's like every tune or every other tune, he keeps doing this, you know?
So he was really vibing off you.
Really vibing. And I'm like, okay, like, let's play. Let's, like, you know, let's deal. He wanted to get into this duo vibe, you know, which I realized that's his thing. That's what he likes. He wants to know that you're not going to buckle under pressure or like, you know, and like really push him to play some shit, you know?
Yeah. So you're there all of a sudden out of nowhere going toe to toe with John Scofield on stage.
Yeah.
Like, you had no idea it was going to go down.
Yeah. I was like, you know, 24 or 25 years old. And here we were like, and I'm the kind of kid that had the Dennis Chambers instructional videos when I was 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, maybe even younger. And I had the VHS in the basement by the drums. And I think it was like Serious Pocket was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I recommend to everyone, please look on YouTube and watch those Dennis Chambers instructional videos. They're really funny because they're the guy interviewing him is kind of like swear, you know, but like,
yeah.
You know, but Dennis is telling you, and he's just got this matter of fact, like, you know, I mean, business attitude that I just love, mm-hmm. you know? And so I used to sit there and he's like, he had Scofield as his house band for his instructional drum video, you know, which is incredible. Like, you know, there's no drum videos that have a legendary, it's very rare to see a legendary yeah. band. Like, you know, Bernard Purdy has one with like these random cats, you know.
Okay, so you had already been, because of the Dennis Chambers videos, you'd already been checking out Sco for going way back.
Fan. I was a mega fan. Yeah. I was like, I was into it and I was trying to play it cool. Like, you know, it's cool, you know, but I was freaking out. And so you know, after that gig, I think we had dinner one of the, I think we played two nights and we had dinner before the gig and super cool. And then I got a call the next day, like, hey Adam, it's John. He's got this really like happy voice, you know, he's always in a good mood, you know. Hey Adam, it's John. I would love for you to come on the road with me, man. And you know, and like next week, right? Next, you know, in a month or so. I was like, and I was walking around Brooklyn, you know, like I just left Average White Band and I really didn't, you know, Lettuce was like, I don't know what's happening with Lettuce. Break Science was just beginning or like, maybe no, Break Science hadn't even started yet. Yeah, I think it was just like Lettuce was just all over the place. Everyone had separate record deals like Wu-Tang, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know.
So he hit you at an opportune time. You were kind of floating a little bit.
It was the right time. And I was like, let's do this. And
so you toured first before you developed the material to make the record. Is that right? Or did you get together and get some stuff together and play it during the tour? Or did you develop it while you were on the tour? What was the way that went down?
He likes to tour hard and go straight in the day after tour. The day where you really want to go to sleep and finally sleep in your own bed. He's like, no. He wants to cut that
day. Because you're well oiled.
Yeah,
let's get this down right now. Let's
capture this shit that we worked out, you know, over the time, you know, and make sure we don't lose it and get soft when we're going home, you know.
Did you have any writing on that stuff? I know you contributed a lot to it.
He let me write so much. He was so open to new beats to write over. He's like, that's your contribution. That's your, like, you know, like you're into the funk thing, the hip hop thing. When he realized I was into like trap music, drum and bass, you know, dance hall reggae.
It was a new world for him.
Afrobeat. He was like, I don't have tunes with these grooves.
Yeah.
You know, and that was always his thing. Like Dennis had grooves for him in 1988 or whatever that were like brand new. They were like go-go. Dennis was from Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he had some of those grooves that Scode had never written to. So I think as a drummer, if you're playing with a amazing artists, like come up with some grooves for them to write to, you know, it's like a rapper. It's like, you know, give the MCs something new to rap over, you know, because you're creating the bass rhythm and they're the lead rhythm. They're the lead thing. And you have to create something that they feel comfortable not repeating themselves over, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really, as a longtime fan of Sco, when that record came out, that was a bigger shift from him than I had heard in a long time. And that was really your influence. And it's that shit stands up. It was so cool what you're doing. I'm like, this guy is really limber, but it's always coming back to the pocket, which is true of all your playing all the time, which is, like I said, 100 times what I love about your playing.
Thank you, man.
Recently, I mean, I don't know how recently, but you guys got that back together again. Like a few years ago, you made another record with Sco, right?
Yeah, well, we did two records. We did a tour, Uber Jam tour.
Yeah.
And then we did the Uber Jam record, got nominated for a Grammy. lost, and then I got kicked out of the Grammys because I lost my ticket.
Oh shit!
But then I met Bootsy by the bathroom, which was all made it okay. And then we went back on tour, and we did another record, Up All Night, which I'm a lot more proud of my playing on that, and the writing was a lot more. That was all those tunes were created on the road at Soundcheck. Mm-hmm. He's a big Soundcheck jammer.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's the new tune. He may have three notes in mind, or, Big Rock Candy Mountain over a house groove or something like, you know.
Yeah.
And you just go with it. Or he wrote some avant-garde stuff that was like, just to test us, just to like some straight future classical avant-garde things, you know. Yeah. Keep us on our toes. And we never played it at the gig. He was just big into sound checks. And
yeah.
So that's where we wrote everything. So Up All Night was the second record. And then we did a little tour for that. And then it ended, you know, because he was going to go through some straight ahead stuff with Bill Stewart, one of my idols.
Yeah, mine too.
And we stayed friends over the years. We just talked, and we had him guest with Lettuce over the, you know, as Lettuce grew, like, you know, and we kept having him back. And he actually filled in for Shmeens when Shmeens had a baby. And
whoa.
Yeah, like he did like New Year's Eve with us, you know. Like,
how was that?
Amazing. He played all the shit perfect, you know.
What a trip. Yeah. Yeah, I like to hear a board tape of that.
Yeah, I think it's out. It's out. It's like,
oh, okay, cool.
But yeah, he's just like, he can play anything, and he's part of the family now. So yeah, he wanted to get back together and do Uber Jam 2. Uber Jam 2, yeah. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he was going through the death of his son at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was so rough. But, the fact that he got – the music helped him get through all that situation. And it was just a really heavy time. So that, you know, that's Uber Jam. So that's our third record together.
Mm-hmm. Way to go, man. It's so cool. What an opportunity. And you were the right guy to bring that flavor to what he was doing. All those flavors. I want to ask you about another side of your playing, which is because we were talking about those cities that have such strong rhythmic identities, New Orleans, D.C. Can you tell me a little bit about your relationship with New Orleans, the music in New Orleans, the players there? You seem like a cat that is now part of that scene as an extended family member. And you would, if there was, it wasn't this year, but if there was an actual jazz fest, you'd be there, multiple sets, playing in clubs, doing jams. Like, you know, you have some long running relationships with those musicians. And before you get into it, I just want to say, I love what you bring to it, because I hear the commonalities, the hip hop swing and the New Orleans swing. There's a certain high degree of swing that I see, that when I see you play with Dr. Claw or any of those cats out there, that works great. It's just fits like a glove with the New Orleans swampy thing.
Mm, absolutely, man. That culture is, you know, again, I got to send a shout out to Eric Krasno and the whole thing he created with Soul Live, and how that bonded with Ivan Neville and Ian Neville and those guys. And they kind of embraced that, you know, our posse in a way that a lot of outsiders, a bunch of, you know, crazy kids from New York, don't get that kind of love from New Orleans, from the real cats, like from day one, you know. So we've been going out there since we're like 19, 20 years old, staying out there for weeks on end and you know, building relationships with people out there. You know, it starts with Russell Batiste for me.
Russell. Funky Meters
and just like all around legend. There isn't a drummer that doesn't know him, you know, his huge, larger than life personality and his style, his way he plays left hand. Like, he'll play left hand on the hi-hat over here, and then he'll switch over here. He's ambidextrous. He's doing all, you know, and he has a lot of like kind of Dennis-isms, like Dennis Chambers things that he does over the traditional New Orleans zigaboo type stuff. So he was the first guy that like, he's like, oh, yeah, Average White Band. He called me Average White Band. He's like, yeah, I remember you. You know, he saw me with Average White Band at Essence Festival, you know. And he was like, I know you, you know. And he took me to his house, and, like, we hung out. And, like, so, you know, that was big for me. Like, you know, for me, like, I've been blessed with meeting a lot of great drummers from the city, like the Cats, like, you know, upon my first couple visits, you know. So I've been blessed with that, and I don't take that lightly. And when I meet people like that, like you, and you know, and I realize that, you know, this is gonna take my playing to the next level, and like, you know, introduce me to a new culture. Because I'm from New York. I'm not from that street parades and everyone swinging, and people just automatically know the difference between swing and straight, and they found that middle place, you know, that like, I don't even know anything about what that, you know, how to play in between, you know, like that was all. I knew, like, in my hip hop records, like, you know, I knew about that, and I knew about, you know, the straight.
Yeah. So you hadn't developed that In the Cracks type playing.
In the Cracks thing was like, what is that? And I knew what the meters were, but until you go to New Orleans and you're around Russell and Terrence Higgins is a master of In the Cracks. You know, there's so many cats, you know, Hurley Riley, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, they're like the OGs. And when you get around them, and then you hang out with Stanton and you hear him talking about everybody and like how much he knows about everyone's style and what part of the city they're from. And, you know, like he's kind of like stands like the, you know, always going off about his knowledge of
the keeper of the records.
Yeah. He'll sit there at the bar, like hanging, and like all of a sudden you're like 2 hours into a breakdown on the shit. You know, he's like the scholar with that shit.
Yeah.
Cause a lot of those cats, like, they just like, that's just what they grew up doing, you know? So
explain. It's not analytical. It's just street playing. Yeah. It's how they do it.
Well, you know, I get that. So Stanton managed to analyze it really well, and he plays the shit out of it, and it's great to learn from him with that shit too.
Tell me, while we're on the subject, tell me a little bit, or tell everybody a little bit about Dr. Claw. It's one of these like super group type of groups. I think you got two bass players in there, which is insane. But do they? I don't know if they switch off or they play together sometimes. But you got Tony Hall.
Well, no, sometimes, right? Tony Hall and Nick are in Dumpster Funk, which is an amazing.
Oh, okay. Movie.
They are two bass players who I love.
But Nick is in Dr. Claw, right?
Nick is in Dr. Claw because Nick and I just get along really, really well. Not that me and Tony don't. Me and Tony are homies too. But Nick is super laid back. He's hilarious, and his voice to me is one of the most unique voices, soulful, funky voices that you will ever hear in your life.
Yeah, he's great.
He's got the high raspy thing that like you just don't hear in 2021 or, you know, like, you know, you hear these pop singers. It's like, he's just the real deal, you know? So, and I don't get to play with singers that often. So I was like, I want a band with the greatest soul singer I know, you know, I want to do this. And Ian was like, I'm in, you know, let's go. Cause me and Ian been homies forever. And then Nigel's like, I love the way Nick sings so much. I want to be in this band. And, you know, and I want to sing background for Nick. And then Nigel will sing lead sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then they push each other to this new level of vocal soul because they can't, you know, because you push Nigel and he goes, ugh, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Nick is like 10 years, 15 years a senior. Mm-hmm. And sang with the Neville Brothers for years, was in barbershop quartets in the 60s and 70s, you know, so he's not messing around. So they push each other like this vocally. And then Kraz is like, wait, hold on, this is killing. I'm going to book the band. I'll get us the gigs and I'm taking the solos.
Yeah. Such a great band. I hope you guys, when gigs start again, can do some more, find a way, whether it's at Jazz Fest or I'd love to see you guys again. I got to see you play a couple times with them, and it was incredible.
Right on, man. It's always a great experience playing with those cats, and they're the real deal, you know?
So one of the bigger gigs you've done that gets a little bit away from all this musician world that we're talking about is the Pretty Lights gig. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what he's been up to, but when he was going on that big record a few years back. You guys were doing some really big gigs, and it was a incredible presentation with the light show and everything. It was, and I watched you play with him, and it was, again, like when I, maybe similar to your Break Science thing, just hearing you incorporate the live drums to stuff that's loop based or you know, triggered. You were triggering sounds. I don't know if you were playing along to tracks sometimes, or if you were, how much that was truly live, but you can tell me a little bit more about that. That was really cool.
Right on. Like you were saying before, I like putting live drums into spaces where live drums don't belong. You know, growing up, you know, coming of age in the early 90s and stuff, like I was obsessed with, you know, hip hop culture, which there was nobody but this one dude out of Philly, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Doing live. Yeah. You know, that one guy we know a little bit about.
Yeah, that one legend guy, you know. But like there was no one doing it. You know, there was like such a small amount. And I know all the homies that were doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was like this tiny little group of like five guys that loved live hip hop. And then I was like going to raves with my friend Jack, you know, we'd go to like, we'd be like this drum and bass thing was just popping off, you know, and like, and I was like, this is incredible, you know, no live drummers from Miles, but you're hearing live drums, you know? And I was like, okay, that's like Break Science. Like I want to do something like that, you know, with live drums. Like, you know, Zach was, you know, I know Zach Danziger was doing that like a little bit, but like, was he in the clubs really? Like JoJo, was he in the clubs doing it where the kids were dancing?
Yeah.
And I was like,
it was disconnected from that scene a little bit.
They were disconnected. They were doing it like drum clinics and like jazz clubs, which is, mm-hmm. they were still doing it. And they had, yeah. a legit concept, you know.
But the bigger scene where people paid to go hear it were not, they weren't putting drummers out front.
Exactly. So
Pretty Lights was the first time in a big way that was done.
Well, my goal with Break Science was to do that. And we were together in 08 when he started, you know, like when he was just coming up
you mean when Pretty Lights started?
Yeah, when Pretty Lights started, Break Science was
doing it. Oh, you guys were already doing this.
We were already doing the shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, like our whole shit was like DJ Shadow, RJD2 mm-hmm. with live instruments and some samples, you know, and that a little bit of J Dilla and DJ Premier, Pete Rock influence, that kind of stuff. And then having a drum and bass and a King Tubby sort of like reggae vibe, you know, that sort of thing. So we started doing that and he heard about us and, he reached out for me to be his drummer. He's like, you know, I would love for you to come play drums for me. And I had to tell Borm that this was, you know, a major opportunity. He was like, the city of Colorado embraced him in a way that the state of Colorado.
Yeah.
Embraced him in a way that only a few artists get embraced like that, you know,
yeah.
ever, you know, and it was a religious thing for these kids. Like mm-hmm. he was like repping, you know, kind of a hip hop, I'm the hip hop kid of the future.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I love the old school hip hop vibes and the dress and the style and the baggy clothes. But I also like that where it builds to the thing like the EDM stuff. And then the big bass comes in with the
whoop. Yep.
No one had done that yet. There was the hip hop guys, but they didn't mess with that electro stuff.
Yeah.
That buzzy bass dubstep stuff. And you have the dubstep guys that are making like, whoa, 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 you know, that really mm-hmm. like, you know, I call it like horror stuff, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, so he just had this cool way of combining those two cultures. And everyone was like, that's
me. And you're the perfect guy to do it. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know who Pretty Lights is, and if you want to know what we're talking about, I saw maybe a full concert or at least some clips on YouTube at Red Rocks.
Yeah.
It's really well shot and it really shows you off. And if I'm right, I think it might still be there. It was super dope.
There's a couple of videos of that. And the best one was Telluride, Colorado. We played, we played like this big field where like Fish plays, you know, it's like, it was just,
maybe that was the one I saw. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like insane. And you know, we just like flowed. It got to the point where, you know, I was like, we got to do a band, bro. We were doing duo for years and I was like, man, you gotta let me get my homies in here, get Krasno in here. And Benny from, you know, Lettuce.
Okay. And was Borum in it too?
I was like, yeah, I get Borum from Break Science. Yeah. And I had to introduce them. And that's how the Analog Future Band took place. And it put live instruments into a scene that was a DJ only scene. It was the APC controller with the light up, and that's all it was, you know, and laptops. And
well, it made it a lot more compelling live too, because it just brings a whole another dimension to it. Energy.
And I give him all the credit for caring, because he plays a little bass, you know, he has a, you know, he could, you know, he we did this gig with Wu-Tang at Bonnaroo. We had him play bass because he knows that shit, you know.
How cool. Yeah. Now, have you been doing anything more with him? Is there any talks? Is there any?
You know, he took a hiatus about a year or two after I left, and he moved to New Orleans and soaked up the culture there. And now he's ready to do some new stuff, and his fans are just like,
oh, they got to be chomping at the bit. Yeah,
really, it's gonna be a major event when he comes back for those kids and for a lot of like the scene, you know, because he's really a good dude, and you know, his combination of hip hop with futuristic electronic.
He's the only guy that has that vibe that he's got.
Yeah, he just cornered the market with that.
It's really interesting to me too. It's not easy going to make instrumental music and have it be commercially viable. And yet you're a cat that's been in a couple projects that have sort of turned that on its head and have been able to pull it off, which I think is super cool. And no one would bank on that, but it makes sense that it's you, because you're such a phenomenal pocket player that you can make instrumental music compelling to a live audience. You know, I know sometimes you have Nigel. I don't know if you always have Nigel. Well, you didn't always have him, but you do bring vocals into Lettuce. But a lot, for many years, it was pretty strictly instrumental, right? Maybe some chants and stuff, but.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had the friends in LA that are like, you know, unless you play with a pop singer or somebody singing, like, you're not going to work and you're just going to fade away. You know, and they're like, move to LA where you have to do that. And I'm not knocking. I just felt like there was another way, and I felt like, you know, what Soul Live accomplished, what Martin Wood accomplished, what Grey Boy All Stars accomplished without singer.
There's a lane for that.
There was a lane. There was a lane that was wide open, and I just saw it, and I was like, you know what? Like, I want to be a part of this. And luckily, a lot of projects presented themselves that were in that place where it's like, I wasn't behind. Yes, Mr. Singer, sir. Oh, you'd like me to play quieter in the verse. Okay. You know, like, you know, which is like, you know, again, I'm not knocking that. I've had to do that. But
the ability. I just think when you're doing instrumental music, I think it's a bigger challenge because you have to be more compelling to hold the attention.
You got to be compelling.
I think you do. I just think you don't have that person up front that's bringing people in that in the way that most people are trained to be brought in to popular music. So you have to be that great. And the projects you're in, they are. So props to you for doing that and for sticking to that path. It's not like you don't play sung music. You've done plenty of that, but you've managed to find a way to play instrumental music and make a living. So hopefully we get this COVID shit under control and everyone can get back to work in the gigging realm before too long. I think we're just about out of time. Before we go, can I ask you to do everybody a favor? Maybe move your computer. When we took a lesson, I was picking your brain about hip hop drumming and about the thing and that you shined a light on for me where, the beat feels a little disjointed. I'm so locked in with my right hand and my right foot, and you're trying to help me disconnect that a little bit. Yeah, and it was a little bit of a mystery to me. And so I don't break. Hey, Adam, don't break them off too much because we want them to hire you for your lessons. Just give them a little bit. Break them off a little piece.
Well, it's like, you know, if you go on YouTube and you type in Jay Dilla mixtape, right, and it'll give you like a continuous mix of Jay Dilla, you know, and the more you play with that, the more it absorbs into your thing, you know. So you know, I guess the beginning of it is you take a regular, you know, I grew up playing grooves like hip hop, like straight, you know.
Yeah.
Where you just play, which is great. You're playing straight, you're laying it in there, you know?
And yep.
And Dilla came with this, like, where you kind of keep this going. Right, this stuff didn't change too much. You know, the kick and the snare. The snare's still right there. But the hi-hat is now, like,
drunk. This is the part that fucks me up. Okay, break it down.
So I'm literally flamming off of
it. Yeah. Like, and it's almost flirting with the shuffle at times when you're really back.
You're flirting with...
Yeah, but it ain't that.
Yeah, so, you know, I like to, you know, just kind of mess with that. And then, you know, I got with my clap stacks, you know, stack ring percussion makes some great, great clap stacks. So, you know, you flam it off that.
Yeah.
You know, and just a whole nother world. And
you're hired, bro. You got the gig.
You know, you just start moving.
That shit sounds amazing. So before I forget, Vader is the people who thanks Vader, because the last time I picked Adam's brain, I had to pay him. So thank you, Vader, for letting me talk to Adam today.
Thank you, Vader, for the
oddly support. Now this we did not plan this, but brilliant minds think alike. And Adam, show the people what stick you play. We both use the Fusion Acorn. Wait,
ain't
there
that,
you go.
Ain't that amazing?
Yeah, look at that. So
I've never met anyone on tour that I've been with, any drummer that doesn't like this stick.
It's great. It's well. It's in between a 5A and a 5B. It's not too heavy. It's got a 0.580 inches grip. It's 16 inches in length. It has an acorn tip. It sounds warm / full, and the wood is hickory. Vader's sticks are the best. They roll. I love this stick. I find that I can play like I'm not here to self promote, but there's a track on my Instagram that I played that's something I've never done before. It's a real fusion-y track, and there was a lot of intricate shit, and I use these. And if I go any bigger than this, I can't articulate. And if I go smaller, then I'm doing too much work. So this was the happy medium for me.
Exactly. I feel the same way. Shout out to Chad Leaney, you know, for
you were one of the first guys too. Speaking of Vader, that in your stick bag, when I saw you on tour, you had the Vintage Bomber.
Oh yeah. Always.
Because that's a big, so when you go on, like I see you on the Jam Cruiser on some jam festival where that's where I would run into you. You were stuck with crappy house kits.
Yes.
But your kick sound and feel was important to you enough that this was in your stick bag. Because I had to share a kit after you, and you go, yo, wait a minute. Because you had to go to another set, and you're like, let me take that off, and I'm going to give you the lame beater that came with the kit back, because I got to go do my other gig. Like, I think you handed this. One time you handed me the sticks in the jam room because you were probably like triple booked, and you said, hey, let me get that beater real quick. So I know that this is one of your weapons of choice.
Absolutely. Yeah. It takes.
And why do you love this?
Because I came up in the 90s and 2000s where the engineers were into like Metallica and like
clicky,
and they wanted that. They had the long hair. And you know what they're going to do to your hip-hop sound. And I'm in there with my hip hop band, like, hey man, I really want like a round thing. And I heard like recordings. I'm like, no,
it's going to sound like a cannon going off. Cause they probably got like a plate mic in there, and
that's the sound they like. And this takes that away from them. And they can add all the high end they want now with this, you know?
Yeah.
I just like that big, boomy, fat, classic breakbeat sound, you know?
Yep. And I was surprised. Like, I associated this tool with like, oh, I'm going to play my Dixieland gig and I want to feather the bass drum. This is like for the fuddy-duddies down at the retirement home. Like, and in my mind, and you're the first cat that I saw using it at like a regular gig and laying into it.
Oh yeah, this is it.
Yeah, yeah, that's the shit.
You know, just like it's powerful. It's actually heavy. You know, I was practicing just doing like. Just like doing single strokes between the right hand and the right foot. And it's like, it's got this weight to it that just works, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm just so used to it now, but yeah, y'all should try that if you haven't tried it yet.
Evader, if you're listening, send me one of those too. Mine is, you see, I've used mine so much. This is yours. By the way, they last a long time. This is like the one I got when they first put them out.
Yeah. Once it gets a little rough, you just give a little turn, you know?
Yeah. I've done that like 10 times. Running out of good spots. But they're phenomenal. Okay. So yeah, Adam, what a pleasure, man.
Thank you.
You're the shit. You're a great interview. I don't care what the people say. You know, I think you're a good dude. You're an inspiration to me. When I think about the kind of pocket I want to play, you're at the top of the list for just the commitment, the time feel, your stylistic diversity.
Thank you, man.
I'm a fan. You're a hero of mine from my generation.
I was watching you play with Azamatli the other day on YouTube, and I was just like, this dude, because to play all that hip hop stuff within the, you know, their Latin concept and like, I just real quick, I can't interview you for 1 second.
That's fine.
So what is, you know, I heard like what kind of rhythms, like traditional rhythms, Latin rhythms, were they incorporating into the band the most, and from what country were they?
It was all over the place. And that was the thing. Like, we had some stuff that was salsa, but not a lot. We had some cumbia, which is, there's one song you might have seen. I had a drum cam video. Song cumbia, and it goes from a cumbia rhythm, which is Colombian, into more of a funk thing.
Can you play a cumbia real quick? Just 2 seconds.
Let me see if I've got enough length on my headphones here. Okay, so yeah, I'm a little tethered, but. So in the traditional Colombian thing, you would have somebody playing, you know, different instruments. Mm-hmm. So we're always trying to cop that. So there's like a cymbal hit that I would do with open close with my foot.
Right. I did
and
see
the kick. The
I
kick
felt hard for me to do.
And then I'm playing on the floor tom. And the kick comes on the offbeat. Right. And
wow.
Then you're adding some of the, you're using the toms to do their, to cop what they're doing.
Wow.
So that, wow. That's, that shit they actually taught me, because that was on their first record.
You've played that like you've been playing that since you were a little kid.
Thank you. Well, they schooled me. Those guys know their shit. They're into all kinds of stuff. I mean, we had some stuff that was North African.
Yeah.
They're just really open to all the world musics. And so, yeah, that was, you know, I left them a few years ago, but we're still all bros. And sometimes we collaborate. And thanks for asking. Yeah, man. That was a good growing thing for me to dive into all that stuff.
I want to learn that exact groove, like, now. Like,
all right. You got it. No problem.
Cool.
You know how to find me. So thank you, Adam. Thank you, Vader, for hosting. You know, you got my address. I need another one of these. Adam needs some sticks. Happy New Year, everybody. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon, bro.
Vader.